The first movie I saw him in was The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Which was he?
The Ugly.
Everybody, you're Sorkin in it. It's Studio 60, please take just a minute. It's about a show, kinda like SNL, but it only lasted one season. Oh well, we're Sorkin in it.
It only lasted one season, oh well, is right. But here we are, this show, this podcast goes many, many seasons. It's Lex and Brian with Sorkin in it. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Lex.
How are you?
I am doing pretty well. Took the day off work today. I'm here chatting with you.
I love that.
And about to load up the car and take my daughter to go visit colleges.
A trip I have done a couple of times recently. It's a trip. It's a trip in all the ways.
It is. I'm going to get misty.
I know. I did. I really did. But you know what didn't make me misty, Brian? The storylines that attempted to tug at my heartstrings in this week's episode of Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. Or I guess the show was just called Studio 60. But I'm very curious what your thoughts are. What happened in this episode? I feel like it was called The Rap Party. I think it's episode five or six.
Rap with a W.
Yeah.
As if you're wrapping gifts. But in this case, they wrap the show. Which kind of makes me wonder, do they do this rap party every time? But maybe not, because this seemed to be a little bit of a bigger deal.
It seemed clear that they don't typically do it. Yeah.
So the whole thing takes place against the backdrop of this party that's happening. And then there's a few different storylines, as you can imagine, that happen throughout this. Tom gets a visit from his kind of conservative parents from Ohio, I guess. They drove across the country to go visit him at this party and then go see the Redwoods. Matt and Sim, they kind of take off from the rap party to go to a comedy club to try to find new writers for the show. And then I guess there are a couple other things, like Jordan's trying to find some new friends. But the other kind of bigger thing that happens is Cal comes across this elderly gentleman who's kind of confused. He wanders into the party, steals a picture, and then we get to find out what his whole story is. That's kind of it, I guess.
That basically is what happened. You're not wrong.
Okay.
Wow. So here we are. Brian, what did you think of this episode?
You know, I didn't like this episode, Lex. there were
moments.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. As always, we're finding, even in the newsroom, there were moments. But this felt like it was trying really hard to do a few things, and none of them really seemed to make a whole lot of sense to me.
Most of them were not landing. I appreciate that we were starting right after episode five, because there's Laura Graham. It's the rap party for that episode. And she gets more to do in this episode.
Which was nice. She was funny. Gosh, she was funny all the time.
I enjoyed her scene where she's like, why'd you cut my sketch? And all this stuff was happening. I don't know. It was kind of funny. Jordan's drunk at the start of this episode. I think she sets off a glass of wine, maybe two. I don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah. She was kind of sweet. She comes in trying to chat people up. And then at some point she's just like, I need more friends, or I have no friends.
Yes.
Right?
She eventually says she has no friends.
I love the way that Harriet kind of walks her through, and she said, are you trying to make new friends right now? And that was sweet. It said a lot about Harriet and Jordan.
I really enjoyed the Harriet Jordan dynamic.
More of those two.
Yes. We get Harriet saying she almost kissed Matt, and I don't care about that plot line. It's not interesting to me. So Nate Cordry is annoyed with his parents. I felt for Nate Cordry. Like, he had difficult, challenging parents, and he's written in an Aaron Sorkin project, so he has a really crappy dad. That's the Aaron Sorkin way. Except for, I guess, CJ Craig. Her dad was okay. But
he was cool.
Nate is annoyed with his parents, and you very quickly get why he's annoyed with his parents. And I feel like he has pretty solid reasons, particularly when his mom asks Sim, or tells Sim how great she thinks Halle Berry is.
and he says something like, I'm sure he'll mention it to her at the next meeting.
Yes. Yes. And then I actually also appreciate what Simon pulls Tom aside and is like, he has a real job. Like, he works for a living. Like, don't be a jerk. And I get what Sim's trying to do.
Yeah.
Tom's dad is still a jerk, but I appreciated the sentiment nonetheless.
Tom launches into this big tour around the entire studio.
Yes.
While the rap party's going. And we keep coming back to that throughout the entire episode. He's talking so fast because apparently he doesn't want to have to talk to his parents. So he's just going through all the history of the entire network. And it was interesting with the way he was talking about the network. He mentioned CBS and NBC, but he never mentioned ABC. So I'm wondering if NBS is the proxy for ABC here. I don't know.
I think I'm beating a dead
horse.
How
did you feel about his?
I want to know your question too, but I think I'm beating a dead horse on this. However, SNL should have sued the hell out of Studio 60 because like we're opening with the close of an episode and they're playing like the same music. They're playing the ending song from Saturday Night Live, barely, mm-hmm. not even parodied, like barely changed. Same instrumentation, same vibe. Like SNL should be suing these guys into oblivion. But how did I feel about what?
Oh, well, I don't think we should keep coming back to this conversation of theirs throughout our chat today. So like, let's just kind of grab the whole Nate and his parents topic all at once. And I'm curious how you felt that conversation went with them, or do you feel like, how do you feel about his relationship with his parents, I guess, and how that kind of wrapped up?
Well, I feel a couple things. I really did empathize with the character. I thought that the dynamic was well written, because I will say I feel like a human who is creative, who has parents who are very conservative and who see the world very differently and who I can mm-hmm. sometimes struggle to communicate with. So I was like, man, I feel that. The fact, though, that they have a son who's in comedy professionally and successfully and they haven't heard of Who's On First, I don't know, you might say it, ring, 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 ding, 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 ding. Beggars believe, but...
does it.
And then, I don't know, his dad calls him Mark because his brother Mark is in Afghanistan. Then his dad has this blow up, and he's like,
yeah,
that's all well and good, but your brother's on the front lines in Afghanistan. It felt unearned mm-hmm. to me. It felt like not human behavior at that point. Like, multiple things can be true. And then, oh, by the way, Dad, here's a record for your record player of Who's On First. Where did that come from?
Like, I wondered that too.
If that's going to be a thing, at least give me the moment of Tom giving somebody a note saying, hey, can you take care of this for me? And that person saying, it's 3 a.m. I guess it's supposed to be the rap party, but Tom's parents are totally fine being at it. Oh, no, I guess the show ended at 10.
They have to film it early because they're on the West Coast. Right.
So I guess it's still late. But here, it's after 10. Please go find a store that has this vinyl of Who's On First and get it. I guess if it were today, he would just take them to YouTube, but I really no, YouTube already showed up on this show with the comedian, like just find it. Dumb. Anyway, so I didn't like how it wrapped up, but I did find the conceit believable. How's that?
Sure.
You'll accept?
I do accept. The idea of people walking their folks around the set seems like pretty cool, you know, and Tom should be proud of the work that he's done. Like, he is one of the big three. Like, he and his parents should be proud too. And I get the impression that his mom is like reasonably happy for what he's been done for himself. His dad calling him Mark made me wonder, is his dad kind of
losing it,
showing early signs of decline or something like that? And at that point, I have like a little more sympathy for the parents, just because they're kind of, if they really are experiencing that, and he is just kind of out of it, that makes the whole thing a lot sadder. But yeah, I sympathize for Tom. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And the fact that they would come see this and then immediately get in the car and drive off to Yosemite or something, that beggars belief for me too. Mm-hmm. I don't get that they wouldn't like stay at a hotel, hang out, go have dinner together or something.
They're just leaving.
Like, he's not attached. He doesn't have to stay at the rap party. Like, they can go do something together as a family. That's weird to me.
I totally agree. It's a great call. So I know that Sorkin loves his bad dads, but this guy was pretty bad. I'm putting them to bed now.
Okay. We're done.
Like parents. We mentioned earlier that, you know, some of the scenes with Lauren Graham, she gets a little bit to do. She has some fun with Danny and Matt. Then mm-hmm. Matt's hitting on her, which I believe they were an item in real life at some point.
Oh, really?
When he hits on her, she's accepting of it briefly, but he says something super creepy. Now, I'm not above it. I thought it when the show was on initially, when Gilmore Girls was on initially. I was like, here's my number, and if you can also give it to the girl who plays your daughter on the show, that'd be great. Now, it's true. Ugh. Both Alexis Bledel and Lauren Graham, beautiful women. Like, I get it, but a weird thing to say. Like, a weird thing. And, like, if you actually, like, to say to friends casually, hey, those are both beautiful women, I'd date either one, were I single and they interested, that's one thing.
Right.
But to say to the woman who you know and could date, hey, by the way, I'd like to date you or your much younger co-star, is weird. So I didn't like mm-hmm. that. Nor did I like the next thing.
What did they call her? There was, like, a
calico
hot butter biscuit?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Buttered biscuit is what they referred to Lauren, I believe. Yes. Yeah. And Calico Gals, which seems, I think he's just trying to, I don't think that was funny. And so I don't know.
I think he's needling.
Just trying to be funny. Yeah.
But so then Danny, this is, I think, the second time Danny's been creepy with Matt and women. And he's like, hey, here's three girls. I didn't even catch why they were there. Ugh. But two other girls plus Treasure.
Lacey, Shauna, Treasure. I got them all.
You got them all. I didn't understand why they were there other than to be attractive women. And the one girl not understanding, I mean, it was funny. I will grant that it's funny. It also simply, it didn't even beggar belief. It just felt so unbelievable. It was like, it didn't belong in the show at all. Because the one girl didn't understand what Matt did. And he's like, I'm the executive producer and head writer. She's like, but what does that mean? And he's like, I write the show. And she's like, but what does that mean?
What does that mean exactly?
This is an adult human. Well, this is an almost adult human. Like, she understands what a writer is. She understands that the words were written. It's dumb.
Yeah.
And we go from that, Brian, to, I think, my least favorite plot line of the show. And maybe you'll challenge me on this. Maybe you like this one. But we saw this storyline done better with Toby Ziegler, I think in season one of The West Wing, with a vet who died. Here we have a writer who's alive, and I only ever refer to him as the old guy. And I said, I remember this plot from Studio 60, and it's annoying. West Wing did this way better. This is annoying. This is very annoying. He's a fan of Sid Caesar's. And, like, I'll save some thoughts. But let's do the same thing we did for Tom and his parents. Let's go through the old guy plot. What were your feelings about the old guy plot? What's your take?
From the moment we saw him, I felt the same way that you did. Sorkin has no business bringing back this storyline. It was fine in the West Wing. It got really bad here. I love Timothy Busfield. I would like to be friends with him in real life. I like to think that we would be just
make that happen.
We could be buddies. And I like Cal, but Cal is like, it's layered on like 10 layers too thick here. And it doesn't make sense. I don't understand why it's here at the cast party. I don't understand like whose character it's developing. Like we're sure more FaceTime for Cal on the show. Danny gets something to do barely at the end, but it seems in service of nothing. And the only connection point I found it to any part in the rest of the show was when Tom's taking his parents through the show and he's given the whole history lesson. He mentions Philco Comedy Hour or something.
The Hollywood 10.
And I guess this old dude worked on that. Okay, great. But it did nothing to endear me to anybody else on the show.
Yeah.
Particularly Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah. And I don't even understand what story he's trying to tell, really, because the guy is initially not understandable. Like, what is he doing there the day the show airs? How's he just walking around in there? How did he get back there? He's mumbling.
Maybe his badge still worked, right, just like in newsroom.
He's being incoherent. And then later at the end, when suddenly Matt and Danny have nothing but all the time in the world to sit and listen to him talk about his experiences as a fairly unsuccessful writer, now he's totally coherent and thoughtful and interesting. What was he doing before? Just talk. Just explain the situation, which he's clearly capable of doing. And shoot, like, he's playing games with the security guard. Like, this plan had a 1 in 1 million chance of working. And only because it's an episode of an Aaron Sorkin show was Cal willing to even entertain him. And then somehow convince the other two to come talk to him. Oh my God. Like, it just felt so stupid. I wrote at one point, hey, old guy who Cal loves, go away. He didn't listen. I really, really didn't like it. But I'm pretty sure we're getting very close to the two plot lines I kind of liked. Oh, the old guy remains annoying. I delete my notes in real time while we do this. I'm deleting that. But two plot lines that I didn't hate. Number one, and you can pick which one we go into first. Sim has heard about a comedian who they go check out, and things happen. And number two, Harriet's boyfriend, the baseball player, slash Jordan, slash Harriet. Those are the two plot lines that I thought were best handled in this episode.
Let's do those in order.
Okay.
I agree. I didn't hate either one of these. They both felt a little on the predictable side, but not necessarily in a bad way. I don't need things to be surprising for me to enjoy them. And this is one of the ones that I did remember from, you know, however long it's been, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But yeah, so Sim, he's trying to recruit people to go with him to go to the improv because he's heard about some comedian, right?
Yeah, not people, just Matt. He just wants Matt to go, right?
Right, but Matt wouldn't do it.
But then he does.
Yeah. I liked the way he talked him into it.
Yeah, and it was actually pretty interesting. He convinces Matt in part by saying, hey, you're racist. Or he convinces him by insulting him. And he, like, Matt does a joke that's, you know, pretty edgy. And Sim's like, I'm offended that you would never put that on the show. And he's like, you know, it's not a bunch of Harvard guys in the room. I didn't go to Harvard. Yeah, but you don't have any black voices in the writer's room, and you should. And Matt feels like he's maybe being accused of racism. But he also appreciates the conversation. Like, he's offended, and he's like, okay, I get it. And so they go. And
I think Sorkin writes these kinds of conversations well.
I agree.
Where people don't need to, like, bully each other to get them to be open-minded to think things. And I think one of the things I appreciate about it the most is that it makes me want to be more open-minded when I see people have these kinds of conversations. That aspirational feeling is something I would like to see in myself, of someone being able to say, you know, in this case, there's comedy to be found in experiences that are removed from your own. And he's like, you know what? I think you're right. Let's go do it. And so, I don't know. I want to be that person too.
I feel you on that. And I think you're right. He handles it well. I think he handles those touchier subjects well. And, like, people being real but direct. Oh, I liked it. And
it was a bad version of that conversation. Yeah. And that happened in Princeton, was it, with Don trying to talk to the rape victim. So, you know,
yes.
It doesn't always work out. But this one was good.
I don't know who told Sim that he should check out Willie Wills, because that person was wrong. Willie Wills was bad.
they were super wrong.
You said this was predictable. I remembered a little bit of this plot line, but at first I thought, this is the, like, I thought Willie Wills was going to be the guy. He's like, I can fix him. But very quickly, no. And so the only thing that doesn't work to me in this scene is once, like, Sim gets really upset at Willie Wills for doing the most predictable tropey humor. But then when another comedian is on and Matt can just barely hear him, he instantly realizes this guy's good. And some of that's like the magic of TV.
Yeah.
Like, let's give it time. But he figures that a little bit too quickly. Oh, this guy's good. And I like the conceit, because this guy is good, but not great. This guy needs work. Like, this guy is okay. Mm-hmm. Nobody's laughing. And that's part of what Matt likes.
And he was bombing. That was nice.
But because he's too smart for this crowd, I guess. But he also needs work on how to shape his jokes a little bit better. But they see something. Then they very aggressively hire him. I didn't like the scene of the hiring as much as I think Aaron Sorkin wants me to.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're jerky about
it. That made me uncomfortable, too.
I didn't like it. They're really... My note is they hire him aggressively. I don't love it. So I'm at least consistent.
I wrote, is this how things work? People don't ask if they want a job.
Right. Like, you are coming here. You're blowing off your friends. You're going to, like, at least be nice about it. Hey, we see some great things. And, like, near the end, Sim's like, don't let me down. Like, do great. And what? But, like,
yeah.
They're, I don't know. They could be so much nicer about it. You're about to change this guy's life, potentially. Be nice about it.
Yeah. He took it well. It was a nice conversation. The guy seems like really intelligent, and he's gonna be funny. I look forward to seeing him be really funny. They said, you got your ass kicked, and he said, I know, it was my ass.
And that guy seems funny. He definitely is gonna be on the show. Like, he's, I remember that he becomes a cast member, so it's gonna, spoiler alert, it's gonna work. So I like that storyline. It kind of just ends in this episode.
Yeah,
but fine. And then Jordan is aces. Like, the thing that I liked most about this episode is Jordan. Jordan is, like, just a great woman. And so I was annoyed the whole time that, oh, she's got to be drunk this episode. Like, she's got to be a little bit off her game because we can't let perfect women be perfect. So she meets the baseball player. She's has those scenes with the women of Studio 60. I was going to say Sports Night, but that's not the right show. And she's trying to make friends. She's awkward about it. Okay. But so when she goes to the baseball player, I love this whole thought of, couldn't find a baseball, but we've got these things. Like, here's an orange that we painted like a baseball. And here's the, like, hilarious. And of course, the baseball player has a baseball.
This one explodes.
Great. You're right. That one explodes. And when he signs it, she makes a face. And I'm assuming you did the same thing I did. Just, oh, he wrote his number on this. Like,
yeah.
And he's rude
to
Jordan.
Worse.
Yeah. He references her ongoing sex scandal.
Yeah. But it also sounded like he was interested.
I don't know. Oh, yeah.
It did say, like, he wasn't quite as scandalized as maybe he should have been. I don't know. But, like, He says, oh, yeah, so you like the clubs, eh?
Yeah, you know, like, yeah, you like those sex clubs, huh? Like,
call this number. We'll go to them together.
And I loved Jordan in that moment because she's like, really?
Yeah.
Like, I can't remember exactly what she says, but her point is like, seriously? Like, I'm just trying to have a good time. Like, and like, oh, yeah, when he says clubs, she, I don't know, intentionally or not, mishears it as cubs. Like, she gives him a chance mm-hmm. to get out of it, and he doesn't at all. But so then she tries to protect Harriet. Like, what a bro. Yeah. And I know that maybe is a little bit sexist, but that's what it felt like. It felt like she was being a bro to Harriet, and I appreciated it. Because she's like, oh, did you get your thing signed? And she's like, oh, yeah, it's good. And Harriet's like, let me see it. Did you write something cool? And she's like, yeah, no, it's in my bag. Now, she could have done better on the lie.
Yeah.
I already had my intern take it to my office. Like, just if you're going to mm-hmm. Protect her. But she is a little too transparent. It's like, bag. And she's like, we'll take it. And then Harriet, of course, puts together. And it's a nice moment for Harriet because Harriet figures it out without needing to be told. Mm-hmm. And she even then has a compliment for Matt, who doesn't get to hear it. Of course he did, because he's the opposite of Matt. And that guy really sucks.
Yeah, I didn't like that Harriet said, I deserve that. That was the, you don't deserve that. You deserve better.
It's funny. You're 100% right. And I misinterpreted it in the moment watching it to make it be better, which was not at all what she was saying. So this is just me revealing my own stupidity. Like, I deserve the kindness of your attempting to protect me from knowing that this is what happened, because that she did deserve. Not in any way what was intended by the writing or the performance. And I just simply made it be a happier story for me. I'm a simple man.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Harriet does deserve people to be nice to her. That's as does everybody.
Yeah.
Most people. Do you think Jordan should have warned Harriet? Should she have said, hey, just so that you know, this happened. I don't know if he's handing out. He puts his numbers on everything, but I'm sure this isn't his jersey number. Do you think she should have? Like, that's not how it was written at all. Yeah. She was being sweet to Harriet and trying to protect her feelings, but
I'm upset that I'm torn on it, because my default answer would be, yes, she should have simply told her this is what happened. She didn't, because they're not yet friends.
Right.
And I feel like that puts it in a harder situation. And I've never been a woman, but I do think that, especially given that Jordan knows that this baseball player has done wrong and she's trying to look out for Harriet, the better thing to do is to say, Harriet, I'm sorry to be the voice of this. Do with the information mm-hmm. whatever you'd like. And this is just you and me talking. Here's the ball. Like, you don't have to say, like, here's the ball mm-hmm. that is for me. And let it be. Because that's the even nobler thing to do. I think she's trying to do right by Harriet.
Right.
And maybe even, if we want to way overread into the text, Brian, which, why wouldn't we?
We're here.
Maybe her bad story about, oh, it's in my bag, so I can't get it, which is like right there. She's holding her bag. Maybe mm-hmm. she was consciously or subconsciously teeing up to get discovered. She was showing, first, look, I'm protecting you.
Sure.
And I'm also setting up to have to reveal. It's like, oh, I have a thing to tell you, but I can't tell you. Like, of course I'm going to tell you. I just said this thing. Maybe she was doing a little bit of that. I don't know. I'll give it to her. I think that she was acting nobly, but yes, the plan should have been to tell Harriet.
These are all kind, intelligent people. We assume that they have the best of intentions here.
Plus the old guy who sucks.
Yeah. Well, he probably was kind. I don't know.
I hope we never see him again.
Yeah. You know, I like that actor though. He's super cool. Like,
oh, really?
He was, yeah, he was, the first movie I saw him in was The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Which was he?
The Ugly. He was so
I know nothing
that
of
movie.
That movie, by the way. Lex hasn't seen it.
Yeah.
But so this was not a good episode. I did like those two storylines we just discussed. And I honestly liked Lauren Graham. And I also liked that this was clearly not shot at the same time, because they saw Sting, but we don't see Sting. Like, Sting is not there.
Sting had a very short time on set. Yeah. Him and his lute had to go home.
But yeah, this.
But, you know, who's to say Sting would stay for the rap party anyway?
I think my biggest. Here's the, I promise I'm going to get a sentence out there at some point.
I believe you.
It felt in some ways like this episode was aiming low. Like, hey, we'll have three sexy women who can be tantalizing to Matt, but also be very stupid. But then you've got this plotline about blacklisted writers and this old guy and the kind of mystery that we have to unravel with him. And that is not appealing to the masses. That's not even appealing to people who like the show like you and me. Like, it's so mm-hmm. What was this episode trying to do? I think I've used this analogy before, but I'm going to do it one more time. Weird Al Yankovic has talked about how when he's going to do his original songs, he's got a list of song styles or artists he wants to do style parodies of and a list of topics. He's like, oh, you know what? I could do a song about germs in the style of Nine Inch Nails. And he called that song Germs. I could do a song about a giant television and style parody of REM. Great. It felt like there was a list of storylines, and Sorkin's like, oh, I'm going to pick this one, this one, and this one. These stories didn't really mesh well together. It felt ham-fisted, the thing you referenced earlier, with how Tom's character kind of alludes to something that's going on with old guy. But this episode did not, like, one of the magic things of Sorkin is when, like, all of a sudden, kind of like Larry David also does, all of a sudden, like, four or five plot lines all intertwine and feed off each other in clever ways. And there's reveals and surprises and whatever else. And this one felt like it was just a hodgepodge of stuff that mostly didn't have to have anything to do with Saturday Night Live or, you know, a show like that.
Yeah. Yeah. If Bartlett's wrestling with some internal demons or if there's something very personal going on in Josh Lyman's life that, oh, just happens to connect thematically with whatever bill they're trying to get through Congress or some other thing that they're trying to get off the ground. That's when it feels more magical. And that's when it feels kind of special and appropriate to the content. These don't make any sense with each other.
Yeah.
And so that's where it ends up just feeling like, well, if they're not connected with each other, did we learn a little bit more about the backstory of anybody, or will Tom's parents come up later? Or I sure hope the baseball player, we just don't hear much about him.
I feel like he's going to get more episodes so she can dump him.
Okay. That's good. That'll be nice.
But I could be wrong.
But yeah, none of it feels connected to each other, and none of it really feels all that connected to any sort of longer arc aside from Harriet's love life, which we already talked about is like not what we're super
much of it
in.
Is all in the service of her realizing she should be with Matt. I know I've said this to you multiple times. Like, I know there's going to be some plot line that involves Nate Cordry going to somewhere where he doesn't belong and John Goodman is there, maybe as a judge. And I feel like it's going to in some way involve Mark. I feel like it's going to, in some way, my memory is like somebody insulted the military or somebody did something wrong and Tom's defending. I'm sure I don't have it right, but it's something along those lines. But there will
maybe
be like
we'll meet
the
Mark,
lightest of payoffs.
And it's actually Rob Corddry.
Wouldn't that be great? I felt a little bit for Nate Cordry because, like, he has to talk about how his parents care, like his older brother more. And if we're ranking Cordrys, and let's not.
Sure.
Rob is the more successful Cordry.
Yeah, it's true.
Not on this show.
No, not on this show. And I saw Nate in some other show recently. So good for him. Glad he's still working. Glad he's doing great.
I once worked with him on a podcast, and he was lovely. Just the nicest.
Oh, good.
I wish I could remember what the podcast was. And now I'm quickly Googling it for our listeners, while I also remind them that they should go and, you know, become members of The Incomparable. I was going to say Earwolf, which is where Nate Cordry's podcast was. Go to theincomparable.com/members. You can sign up if you're already a member, or if you're going to become a member, send some money our way. That would be the nice thing to do. And you get all kinds of bonus content. You can hear us talk with Dan Morin about Sports Night.
You got
and you
there.
Get all kinds of other extras. So, yeah, you should absolutely do that.
Please do. And in the meantime, for the next week, Lex and I need to figure out a slight scheduling issue, but I think we're still going to be able to do it. So I hope you, listener, plan to watch the next episode, which is episode 7, called Nevada Day, part 1.
Can't wait.
So it'll be a two-parter.
Reading Aloud. That was Nate Cordry's podcast, Reading Aloud. It wasn't very popular.
And he was in For All Mankind, a beloved
That's
Apple
right.
TV series. He was in Sugar, which is Colin Farrell's new TV show.
I haven't watched that one yet.
I think also on Apple TV. So that's exciting.
Correct. Well, Brian, what a pleasure. We'll figure out our next episode. And listener, if it's not there next week, just wait for the week after and it'll show up. I promise.
We will. We will show up, and we look forward to talking
to you. We love you. Kisses.
Oh, don't forget.
Keep working at it.
There we go.